trumpet song. And call the brave and only brave and only brave
Sound and Alarm from Judas Maccabeus by Handel, recorded in 1929 by Walter Widdop, with a studio orchestra conducted by John Barbarolli. Well, that marks the close of another programme. I'm so glad you were able to join me. Next week, while I'm searching out more musical treats for you, James will be back with plenty of treats of his own, which I look forward to hearing at home. I hope you'll be joining him too. Same time, 9 o'clock, next Sunday morning here on BBC Radio 3. Sunday morning is a unique production for BBC Radio 3, with studio production this week by Lyndon Jones.
My name's Mark Ravenhill and I'm a playwright.
On BBC Radio 3, a season of plays created by one of Britain's leading playwrights.
I've always listened to radio drama since I was a child.
Mark Ravenhill introduces A Nightmarish Vision of the City.
Brecht is one of my very favourite playwrights, and I think we have maybe a limited idea of what Brecht is based on the famous plays that get produced quite a lot. But Jungle of the Cities is an early play, and it's very much Brecht the poet creating this very strange, extraordinary, and I find very enthralling world.
Drama on 3, tonight at 8:30. And go to the Radio 3 website to hear another of Mark Ravenhill's choices, The Octoroon.
You're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's 2 minutes past 12 o'clock and time for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
The actor Jonathan Hyde will be familiar to film buffs as, for example, Ismay in Titanic. He was also in Jumanji and Caravaggio. On the stage, he was Valmont in Les Liaisons Dangereuses and Hook and Mr. Darling in Peter Pan. And, of course, on television, roles in Foyle's War and Spooks. He's currently in Travels with My Aunt. I see, Jonathan, that you've also played Puck in opera productions of A Midsummer Night's Dream, and I can't help wondering if this had anything to do with possibly working with your wife, who was a wonderful singer.
Indeed, that's where we met, at the Sydney Opera House. I'd done it, I think, in Zurich, and the then general manager of the Australian Opera, Peter Hemmings, had seen that, and he said, would I like to do it? And then I'd read about Isabel. She'd had a considerable success, and that's where we met.
How extraordinary that I think an actor and a singer, and we should say Isabel Buchanan, very well known and very fine singer, should live together. That must be quite difficult sometimes.
Well, the choir used to say, there goes Miss Buchanan and Puck.
And music, has that been a constant in your life even before you met Isabel?
Well, I think it has, one way or another. But I do remember that I did love listening to Joan Sutherland records when I was at school even. While some of the other guys were listening to Elvis Presley, I was listening to Joan, which was a bit odd.
How did you end up on the stage?
Well, really, for want of anything better to do, I suppose. I did come over from Australia in...
You were born in Australia.
Yes, I was. And then I came over in 69. I didn't know what, really, perhaps theatre, perhaps a designer, perhaps a painter of some kind. I decided to audition, and they were foolish enough to accept me at RADA.
It's funny how sometimes those things almost have an accidental moment of luck.
Yeah.
Did you find that with appearing in certain things, that something turned? I mean, for example, Titanic.
It's always, to me, accidental and usually fortuitous. That appeals to my magpie personality anyway. I mean, you know, I like to collect bits of coloured glass, and offers and shows of one kind or another, projects of one kind or another, are always sort of exciting when they just come out of the blue.
You were born after the war, like me indeed, but this music comes from the war, doesn't it?
Yes, yes, yes. Someone once described the ruined European cities, you know, when just smouldering ruins and people pushing prams and bits of stuff and so on, that even in the worst times, sometimes people with musical instruments would come out from cellars or whatever, and a quartet would form, they might play a bit of Schubert or something. I thought, what an extraordinary contrast, and this particular Shostakovich is so fragile.
He's a composer who has a kind of facade quite often. Yeah. I mean, he had to have one in order to avoid the purges.
Yes, the music has a sort of, often it's very jolly, but I think there's a great sort of sadness underneath it, a sort of almost a despair. It's like a false smile.
So, and that in itself gives it a very idiosyncratic quality, doesn't it?
Oh, I think it's fabulous. Yeah, I love it.
extraordinarily enough, Jonathan Hyde, the fact that that was a historic recording from 1945-1946 yeah. almost led, didn't it, to the kind of fragility.
Yeah, that's why I love it.
It was very appropriate. It was played by the Kempinski Trio, who were two brothers and a sister. And I see that they used to play all their concerts from memory without the music. Yikes. I don't know if you've seen that film, The Late Quartet, which has just come out, but that aspect comes into it.
Oh, that's wonderful. I haven't seen it. Isabel has. Yeah, she loved it.
I enjoyed it because, although it has some rather melodramatic moments, it was obviously very in awe of the music.
Yes, lovely.
It's always a good
thing. As it should be, yeah.
So we heard the first movement from the trio in E minor, Opus 67, by Shostakovich, played by the Kempinski Trio. You've quite often been cast as a rather villainous creature, haven't you?
Lots of villains. Yes, they stack up rather well. And doubles. I've just realised the other day that I've been playing these doubles. Darling and Hook, Diaghilev and Cedric Messina, Sam Parrish and Van Pelt. In the case of Travels with My Aunt, Henry and Aunt Augusta. It's weird.
And it was as a rather wicked African magician that I think at that point you were playing when you met Isabel.
Well, we met doing Midsummer Night's Dream in Sydney, and then we parted for a brief time when I went to Stratford East to do The Wicked African Magician, extremely wicked. And she went to Vienna to the Staatsoper to sing Michaela in Carmen, which was a new Zeffirelli production conducted by Carlos Kleiber with Domingo and Obrazova, and very fancy and large scale.
Had you forged enough of a closeness for you to go and see her?
I was busy being the wicked African magician. I never got a chance.
Well, it was very wicked.
It was extremely wicked.
However, luckily, we do have a rather wonderful recording of that cast.
Oh, yummy.
So what are we going to hear?
Just Michaela's aria from Act 3.
Thank you.
beautiful aria and beautifully sung.
Oh, fab.
We heard Isabel Buchanan singing Michaela's aria from Carmen, Act 3, by Bizet, with the Vienna State Opera, conducted by Carlos Kleiber. And actually, it's rather nice to hear something other than all the famous Carmen arias, which is what we often get on.
Yeah, passions. Yeah, and also, I thought the Shostakovich one, here's the fabulous big symphonies and so on, so I thought something small was rather
chamber music.
Like. Yes, beautiful. There was a very funny story attached to that, very quickly, and that was that I'd given Isabel a bottle of very expensive perfume, Bella Versailles. I said, slap some of that on, when she went over to sing for Kleiber. And at the end of her session with him, he said, we will take her. She sings well and she smells good. I thought, well, fair enough.
So you helped her career in more than one way.
Oh, absolutely. She wouldn't have been where she got without me.
Now, Jonathan, although I think you're very modest about it, you're quite an accomplished painter, and I saw a very striking portrait you've done of Diaghilev. And, of course, you have reasons to be quite intimate with Diaghilev, as it were.
Well, I played him in 2011 at Chichester, which was a very sort of curious sort of piece. Actually, a screenplay that had been written by Terence Rattigan, and round it, Nicholas Wright had written a sort of shell of Rattigan having a crisis in Claridge's. Where else to have one, I suppose. And so I was asked to play it. And since I just love Stravinsky, I had a previous encounter with Diaghilev, not playing Diaghilev, but playing Astruc, and then playing a character who was, in fact, Baxt in the Glasgow Citizens production of Chinchilla, which was Robert David MacDonald's play, designed and directed by Philip Prowse, which we did at the Edinburgh Festival and various places. And the music for that, I thought, was just so sublime and sort of different, sort of Stravinsky in a funny sort of way, very aerated. And I think Balanchine called Apollon white on white, which is, to me, it's very redolent of sort of beach and sea spray and space. And I find it, for that reason, very...
The white on white is a marvellous description, not just of this piece, which is sublime in many ways, but also Balanchine's choreography, of course, which was not programmatic, but wonderfully abstract in many ways. So this is first a Variation d'Apollon, and then the final Apotheosis.
Thank you.
wonderful music.
Oh, I'll always associate it with the Glasgow Citizens, curiously, because that's where we did the play, and that's my greatest sort of connection.
But you can just imagine, can't you? I remember seeing this ballet with New York City Ballet, Balanchine's company.
I've never seen
it. Was on it. Well, yeah. And you can imagine that wonderful slowing down step. It's just stunning. Well, we have the Detroit Symphony Orchestra conducted by Antal Doraty in, that was the apotheosis, the final movement of Stravinsky's Apollo Musagette, and before that we heard the Variation d'Apollo. Something quite different now, Jonathan.
Just to stir it up a bit, yeah.
Although, again, very important rhythm and pulse here.
Yes, I love it, I love it. It's just tom-toms in the bloodstream, as they used to say. Yeah, I like
Where did you come across this first?
Was it given me, or did I buy it? I don't know. Did somebody say you should listen to this? It's just one of those that just, as it were, popped through the letterbox, and I just love it for the energy and the sheer life of it. It's just
Do you ever feel that there's any kind of correlation between, you know, we had chamber music earlier with the Shostakovich, and we've got very rhythmic music here. Do you ever feel that in the way that a chamber group of musicians get together and exchange ideas, that's what you do with a group of actors quite often, and a kind of an energy comes from listening to each other and then playing off each other?
Hugely, yes. I mean, almost like, I would say, close to sort of what jazz musicians do. You've got to be listening from, in a sense, to be able to improvise as well, because of course anything can happen, and it frequently does.
Thank you.
Diablo Rojo from Rodrigo y Gabriela. Jonathan Hyde, we were talking just now about how, in a way, chamber musicians work together is not dissimilar from the way a group of actors get together and create something. Mm. And, of course, when you get into a larger sized orchestra, as we're about to do with the English Chamber Orchestra, you know, there's a conductor very often. But I wonder whether the role of the conductor is a bit like the role of the director, setting a kind of tempo and the interpretation.
In the instance of what I'm doing at the moment, which was rehearsing Travels with My Aunt, our director, Chris Luscombe, is very much doing that because there are four actors who are having to change shape and change character rapidly. So it requires enormous dexterity, and that has to really come from the eye outside. We can say you need to snap into this and snap into that, and this is, of course, the nature of the brief, you know, and I think that that's what's making it very, very exciting.
Interesting that you've had three composers who were actually working in your lifetime, Shostakovich, Stravinsky, and Britten. And in fact, it's another set of variations that we're going to look at now, isn't it?
Yeah, well, last year I did a production of, was in a production of The King's Speech, which of course originated as a play, and then of course somebody snapped it up and made a movie of it. But there was always a long-term plan to put it on the stage, and Adrian Noble then directed us in I thought, a beautiful, beautiful piece. And we took it and then went into Wyndham's with it and so on. And I was playing Lionel Logue.
Oh, the person who coached the King.
Yeah. Being Australian, the first time I played an Australian. And Charlie Edwards, who was playing His Majesty. And it was glorious. I had to have a piece of Britten anyway. And since this has a specific connection, and I think very fondly of the show that I did with the magnificent Charlie Edwards as the person I played with.
It's interesting, isn't it, how some people come to music through simply sitting at home and listening or going to concerts, but you've come across a lot in the course of your work, really. And I suppose there is an intimacy that you have with a piece when it's used in a play, because you hear it an awful lot.
Oh, hugely, hugely. And, of course, the association is almost, you know, direct. I mean, music goes straight into the bloodstream anyway, but when it has that specific association, then it's very potent.
And it's rather nice that that film is so much about a teacher, as it were, because this is the Adagio and Chant from the Variations on a Theme of Frank Bridge, Opus 10 by Britten, and, of course, Bridge was Britten's teacher.
Isn't that heaven?
curiously enough, Jonathan, that music almost stutters that last piece to get going, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of very hesitant.
Yes.
Gropey.
Absolutely. So we heard the Adagio and Chant from Benjamin Britten's Variations on a Theme of Frank Bridge, Opus 10, very early piece, played by the English Chamber Orchestra, conducted by the composer Benjamin Britten. So when you are preparing a role, do you find memory very easy? Well, I was talking about the Kempinski trio, who actually play everything by memory. And I must say, some of that music, the thought of playing all those notes is one thing. But do you have a particular technique for learning scripts?
Yes, I do.
Tell me about it. I start very early.
As soon as a script... I mean, I was actually in Los Angeles when this offer came through and doing pilot season, what have you, and being the magpie that I am, that the travels with my aunt was too beautiful a piece of glass for me to let go. I just thought it was so intriguing, you know. So I've started looking at the script. I mean, it's changed here and there, and there have been various sort of snips and tucks and so on, but I started nice and early. And then alliteration helps, and association, of course, helps enormously.
And do you set yourself targets? In other words, I'm going to get this bit done by so-and-so.
No, but I try and not to panic. I don't flutter ahead and go, oh, my God, look how much I've got left. I just think, just don't panic. That's really what I have written on the top of the script. And there's a lot of rabbit in Travels with My Aunt.
I mean, and if you're together with Isabel, does she read bits against you so that you can play off?
She most certainly does. Mm. I try not to impose on her too much. But she is incredibly helpful whenever I ask.
That must be really useful, because not only have you got something to bounce off, but you also have a prompter.
I've got a prompter, and she's terribly good. I mean, she's got a very good ear for what sounds good, so she will run ideas past me as well, which is very useful.
You know, we were saying how much we enjoyed the sort of historic recording with the Kempinski trio, and this, again, is to a certain extent a wonderful voice from the past.
Oh, Norena, I think, is just staggering, and it's, I suppose, from an era when the voice was more of an instrument rather than an expression of one's personality. I don't know. I'm not a musician.
And, of course, Handel wrote so marvellously for the voice, testingly, but marvellously.
Oh, gosh, I think it's fabulous.
This is from Atalanta, which is not a piece we hear the whole time, and it's Care Selve.
Thank you.
It is glorious singing, actually. Oh, the way she floats those high notes.
It's a staggering. If I had a leitmotif for Aunt Augusta, who I'm about to play, it would be that, might be, if Aunt Augusta had been a singer, she might have. I'd love her to have sung like that.
Yeah. Care Selve from Atalanta. At the opening of the opera, the hero is about to embark upon the search for his beloved Atalanta, princess of Arcadia. Dear woods, blessed shade, I come in pursuit of my heart. Aide Norina was singing there. You've worked a lot in America, and as you said, still are, so perhaps it's not surprising that jazz has entered your veins.
Yes, and I've been in Chicago quite a lot, and that, you know, a lot of Chicago's great for beautiful orchestral work and opera and all the rest of it, and also lots of blues and jazz and all the rest of it.
Do you ever get to any clubs when you're there?
Yes, I did, and do. I mean, I haven't been there for a while, but I did. We used to go regularly.
And tell me about this number, then.
Bobby Bland is just, it's wonderful. It's the other side of the tracks, almost. It's a harsher, tougher, it's blues, and it's just tough.
And clearly cast quite a spell on Future Generations, because it was later sampled by Kanye West.
So yeah.
It has an ongoing life. Well, here's the original. Bobby Bland with Ain't No Love. Well, Jonathan Hyde, we're going to manage to bring together two members of your family, really, for our final piece, your father and your wife.
Yes, well, there was that wonderful Wendy Hiller, Roger Livesey movie, I Know Where I'm Going, in very misty black and white. And my dad always loved the film, and Isabel sang it on a recording. And actually, I played it at his funeral. It seemed appropriate. We all know where we're going, I suppose. And some voices get right to my heart, and Isabel's happens to be one of them.
Which is fortunate.
It's very fortunate.
It's a very touching song.
It's a sweetheart, isn't it?
I Know Where I'm Going, that traditional aria, arranged by Herbert Hughes, and sung, of course, by Isabel Buchanan, with Sharilyn Kimoli playing the piano. I get the impression, Jonathan Hyde, that you've had a very fulfilled and happy life working with people that you really love and admire. I mean Ian McKellen, for example, you clearly had a wonderful relationship with
him. Ian was... Well, that was when we did the Lear and everything, and it was what I like to call my year of selfless devotion, playing Kent and Dawn and the Seagull. And Kent, you know, it was a wonderful role to play because I had to really look after the main man, you know, and so one didn't have to worry too much about me, which was very refreshing.
Yeah. And you do know where you're going because you're going on travels with your aunt.
Travels my aunt through May and June at the Menier. Yes, that's going to be a bit of a trip.
Well, Jonathan Hyde, many thanks.
Oh, thank you.
Jonathan Hyde talking to Michael Barclay. Next week on Private Passions, Michael's guest will be the Shadow Culture Secretary Harriet Harman, MP. Private Passions is a classic arts production for Radio 3, and the producer of today's programme was Sarah Cropper. Well, a very good afternoon to you from me, Ian Skelly. I'm here to guide you through our programmes this afternoon on Radio 3. In a couple of minutes, you can meet the man who, for the last 20-odd years, has been filling a rich niche market in the recording industry. with recordings of contemporary, newly composed music and early music reaching right back to the medieval period. The composer Anthony Pitts is Catherine Bott's guest in the Early Music Show today. Then we have a concert from Wales. The BBC National Orchestra of Wales is under the baton of Thomas Zondergaard. A chance to hear Schumann's Fourth Symphony. There's also music by Korngold and two pieces by Wagner, the Siegfried Idyll, and an arrangement of his Wesendonck-lieder, not for voice, for violin. The soloist will be the virtuosic violinist Daniel Hope, perhaps better known for his work with Baroque music groups. That's all at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Tomorrow afternoon, we're live at Wigmore Hall once more.
The Monday afternoon Radio 3 lunchtime concert season at Wigmore Hall continues with Britten and Beethoven from the cellist Natalie Klein. Hear it live on BBC Radio 3 as part of our season of music and programmes marking the composer's centenary, Britten 100. Tomorrow lunchtime at 1 o'clock.
Back to this lunchtime, the time now is just after 1 o'clock. This is Ian Skelly with a summary of the BBC News here on Radio 3. The former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Nawaz Sharif, has appealed for cross-party support after claiming victory in the country's general election. Unofficial results from yesterday's vote suggest his Muslim League party won the most seats but may need to form a coalition. Mr. Sharif, who's now 63, was deposed from power by a coup in 1999 and served several years in jail before being exiled. Nine people have been arrested in Turkey in connection with yesterday's bomb attack near the Syrian border, in which more than 40 people were killed. The Turkish government has said it suspects Syria's intelligence service was involved in the attack in Reyhanli, which is a common crossing point for refugees. The Syrian government has denied committing the attack. The Education Secretary, Michael Gove, has become the first member of the current cabinet to say he would vote for Britain to leave the European Union if a referendum was held now. But speaking to the BBC, he said his preference was for a change in the UK's relationship with the EU and that he supported David Cameron's plan to renegotiate the conditions of membership and then hold a public vote. The government has insisted that hospitals are best placed to determine staffing levels after senior nurses warned that patients were being put at risk on many wards in England. The Safe Staffing Alliance, which includes the Royal College of Nursing and the Patients Association, said nurses were often having to look after more than 8 patients, substantially increasing the risk of harm or death. British scientists have said they hope a new type of wheat they've developed will help farmers feed the world's growing population. It's thought the variety, which is bred from ancient and modern grains, could increase production by a third. Pope Francis has created more than 800 new saints. Most of those honoured were Italians from the 15th century who were killed for refusing to convert to Islam. And the weather, rain across western and central areas of Britain will continue to move eastwards during the afternoon. It'll become clearer in most places by early evening, leaving some scattered showers, mainly in northwestern Scotland. And that's the BBC News and weather. It's 3 minutes past one. So on to the Early Music Show, and Catherine Bott surveys the work of the vocal ensemble Tonus Peregrinus. The programme opens with a recording from their latest release of works from the Eton Choir Book, a 13-part canon by Robert Wilkinson.
Yeah. a dense 13-part canon, all built up on Jesus autem transiens. And transiens is a very significant word, but Jesus passing through them. The music passes to all sorts of places in this amazing piece by Robert Wilkinson from the 15th century Eton choir book. It was performed on their latest recording by the ensemble Tonus Peregrinus. There's going to be much more music from the Eton choir book later in today's early music show, and today we're focusing on the work of the group, whose website Bill Matter calls it authentic and original, an ensemble for new and old music. With me in the studio is Anthony Pitts, who founded Tonus Peregrinus in 1990 when he was a scholar at New College, Oxford. Welcome, Anthony. Now, this is the early music show, but I can't help noticing that you've put the word new before old on your website homepage. What are the aims of Tonus Peregrinus?
The very first recording we did was, in fact, entirely instrumental, and that was of a piece of mine, a kind of chamber symphony called Music for a Large Audience. So that was new. And the very first gig we